All right, good morning, all. I'll announce. She'll be here a little bit late, but she's coming. Welcome to the February 11th, 2025 meeting of the Colorado River Basin Regional Water Quality Control Board. For everyone joining us in the meeting room, please turn off or silence your cell phones. This meeting is being webcasted and recorded, so please speak clearly. This meeting is being conducted in a physical location and is also available via remote access. For people who only want to listen or watch the meeting, the board's customary webcast is available. For those in the Zoom meeting, you will be muted with your camera off until it is your turn to speak. The host will then unmute you and ask you to turn off your camera if you have one. Turn on your camera if you have one. When you're done speaking and the board members have completed asking questions, you will be placed on mute and your camera turned off. You can remain in the Zoom meeting until the completion of your item and then choose to exit the meeting or continue. Before we get into it, I will note that board member Azucena will be a few minutes late, but we are expecting her to come in the next 10 to 15 minutes. With that, board member Wright, do you want to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Repeat after me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Just the one. There too, right?
Oh, yeah. The pause. Gotta respect the punctuation. Okay. Before we continue, can we please do a roll call?
Chair Satin.
Present.
Vice Chair Perez.
Present.
Board Member Beltran Serrano. Absent. Board Member Gonzalez.
Good morning. Present.
Board Member Music.
Present.
Board Member Wright.
Here.
Chair Satin, we have a quorum.
All right, the purpose of the public meeting is for regional board members to obtain testimony and information from concerned and affected parties within the Colorado River Basin region regarding water quality issues. We welcome hearing from the public at this meeting. Any person wishing to speak should have submitted a speaker request as described in the agenda instructions. For those items listed on today's agenda, you will make your comments at the time the item is being considered. If you wish to speak on an item that is not on the agenda, you may speak now during the public forum. Comments will generally be limited to 3 minutes. The board clerk can now identify the speakers who have submitted speaker cards for the public forum.
Yes, we have Nancy Del Castillo via Zoom.
Wonderful. Nancy, the floor is yours.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Chair Music and board members and members of the public. My name is Nancy El Castillo with United for Justice. For the past two decades, our Salton Sea shoreline communities have been impacted drastically by a gas known as hydrogen sulfide. Unfortunately, our communities were unaware of the numerous wastewater facilities and other permitted facilities discharging into the Salton Sea. Many, which do not meet the state standards, lack of the proper infrastructure, and many times have been in violation of their permits. United for Justice is the first organization between Imperial County and the Coachella Valley to deploy air monitors along the shoreline communities of Bombay Beach, Calipatria, in Salton Sea Beach. With a grant made possible by the California Air Resources Board, these high-tech monitors measure five gases and other parameters, which one is hydrogen sulfide. Based on data from the month of October through December 2024, a total of 67 exceedances occur for hydrogen sulfide in the three communities mentioned above. We are here once again to request for Region 7 to protect public health as we continue to be underserved. We are respectfully requesting for all measures to be taken, including to assist all facilities throughout the Salton Sea Basin for financial assistance that qualify and are entitled to such funding to protect public health. Our founder and EO, Ms. Garcia, has stated in the past to regulatory agencies, universities, and others, as long as the water is impaired in Salton Sea, our communities will continue to suffer from toxic air pollution. We thank you for your attention in this matter and hope you will push to protect our present and future generations. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Del Castillo. Any other cards?
No, that would be it.
Wonderful. Okay, we now move on to agenda item 3, which is the review and approval of the minutes for the board's prior meeting on December 10th, 2024. Can I have a motion and a second, please?
So moved.
Second.
Roll call vote.
Chair Satin?
Aye.
Vice Chair Perez?
Aye.
Board Member Gonzalez?
Aye.
Board Member Music?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Motion carries.
All right, for agenda item 4, the board will now hear an update from Laurel Firestone, our liaison to the State Water Resources Control Board. Laurel, are you here?
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Sure can. Floor is yours.
Okay, great. And just so you all know, on Zoom, it's really hard to hear the boardroom. So I don't know if the audio folks can amp it up at all, but it's hard to hear. But I wanted to give an update. I've been really involved in the wildfire response and emergency response and recovery efforts, particularly through Division of Drinking Water. And we have an emergency management program across the water boards that was developed a few years ago, which has just been essential in this time. And of course, in close coordination with the LA Region 4 Regional Water Quality Control Board. So we're doing a lot of work with impacted water systems, advising on drinking water notices and inspecting damage in the wildfire areas. In general, 5 of the 9 impacted water systems have restored service and lifted notices, but the remaining impacted systems really, and sort of pressure zones within systems tend to be the ones that have suffered the most damage and will take a lot longer to resolve. We are also really involved, again, along with Region 4, with the Cal OES Debris Removal Task Force, removing household debris and the Watershed Debris Flow Task Force that's mitigating post-fire debris flow and contaminated runoff, and doing a lot of work to try to coordinate interagency coordination, external communications, and just really appreciate there's staff across the state that are volunteering to support recovery efforts and sort of advise on best management practices to protect water quality during, especially during debris removal. So, you know, wanted to recognize how much is going on around that effort right now. In addition, kind of on our core work, we have the 2026 integrated report, which includes this region. And actually, this afternoon, there's a remote public workshop to provide an overview of the 2026 integrated report draft. We will be holding a hearing on that. We won't be voting on it yet, but our first hearing to get comments is in March, and written comments are due in April. We also released a fact sheet around frequently asked questions for our Making Conservation a Way of Life regulation that went into effect. And you can find the document on our website and for the Making Conservation a Way of Life website. And the regulation is effective as of January 1st this year. And urban retail water suppliers are required to submit an annual urban water use objective report by January 1st of each year. So far for this year, 75 were submitted on time. So there's still some work to do to get those in. The actual new objective isn't enforceable until 2020. But reports are required to be calculated and reported each year starting this year. We also are doing a a ton to try to update our Sacramento Delta update to the Bay Delta plan. We're holding a series of technical meetings to get more input from water users, environmental groups, and California Native American tribes on our proposed update. That we released a draft this past fall on, it's looking at both voluntary agreements and a regulatory pathway. We're also doing a lot around our administrative hearings office is moving forward with hearings around the site's project authority application, as well as the Delta Conveyance Project. And we have a hearing coming up on February 20th to consider designating the Kern County Subbasin as a probationary basin pursuant to SGMA, the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. So we will be considering that at our February 20th meeting. We are also holding workshops. Sorry, I have to sneeze. Okay. Around our urban stormwater infiltration policy. So we're trying to, we have a proposed statewide water quality control policy for urban stormwater infiltration. And we're trying to, we're getting public feedback on that. I think the last thing I wanted to highlight is we are, just give you a heads up that we're likely to hold the Salt and Sea update where we do an annual workshop to in our oversight role of the Salt and Sea order on May 21st. And I think the hope is that we're able to do it in the region. Of course, if we're not in the region, there still will be local opportunities but to participate. But we are wanted to sort of do a save the date for May 21st for folks. I'll confirm once that is actually final. It's not final right now, but I wanted to get it on your calendars as early as possible because I know folks that are participate in that, and I wanted to make sure you had it on your calendar. So I think those are my main updates. I am happy to answer questions. There's a lot going on, and it's good to see you all.
Likewise, any questions for Laurel? All right, hearing none. Laurel, thank you for your update, and we'll
thank you.
Okay, now we move on to the selection of the chair, and oh, I'd also like to note for the record that board member Beltran Serrano has joined us. So now we move on to the selection of chair and vice chair for 2025. Before we move into the nomination process, I'd just like to say that it was a pleasure serving as chair for this previous calendar year. And I also am very proud of the work this region did over the last year. And I think one of the most respectable aspects of this board is our rotating chair seat. And so I'm honored to, therefore, with that in mind, nominate Vice Chair Perez for the next to serve as the next chairperson.
Chair Satin, though.
Yes.
I would prefer that after the selection of the candidate, that it takes effect after the adjournment of this meeting, or to move this item to the last item on the agenda so there's no misunderstanding of who's the current
Understood.
Chair.
I believe we had one person that needed to leave early, so we want to get the vote in, but is there anything preventing us from running through the rest of the meeting?
No.
Okay. So, or we could just make it effective after the adjournment of this meeting.
Sure. Yep.
And just keep it on right now.
Yeah, no, that works for me.
That's fine.
Okay.
That's
okay.
Great.
All right, and sorry, was that an acceptance?
Yes.
Wonderful.
After this meeting.
Okay. I see. It's getting voluntold to keep doing it, huh? All right. Any other nominations?
I would like to nominate B for vice chair.
Okay. All right.
Is that a yes? She's smiling.
I always smile. It makes people wonder what I'm thinking about. What's the commitment? I just want to make sure that...
You'll be my right hand lady.
But as far as meetings or... Okay. That's all? All right. Sure.
Okay. Can we consider both nominations in one vote? Council?
Yes.
One roll. Okay. Do I have a motion to appoint Vice Chair Perez as chair and Board Member Gonzalez as vice chair? Oh, I already did. Do I need one? Okay.
Second.
All right. All right. Can I have a roll call, please?
Chair Satin?
Aye.
Vice Chair Perez?
Aye.
Board Member Beltran Serrano?
Aye.
Board Member Gonzalez?
Aye.
Board Member Music?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Congratulations.
That's very exciting.
Thank you. Happy to serve.
Okay. All right. So moving on to uncontested items for this meeting, the board will now proceed to today's uncontested calendar. All items appearing under the uncontested items calendar are acted upon by the board in one motion without discussion. At this time, there are two items on the uncontested calendar, agenda items 6 and 7. Item 6 is a waste discharge requirement order and the corresponding monitoring and reporting program for the Southern California Gas Company Exposure Repair Project located in Riverside County. Item 7 is a waste discharge requirement order for the CDH Vidal LLC Vidal Energy Project located in Riverside County. Turning now to consideration of the uncontested calendar, does any board member wish to remove any of these items from the uncontested calendar? Hearing none. If any member of the public wishes to remove any of these items from the uncontested calendar, you will need to have filled out a speaker card. Madam Clerk, are there any speaker cards?
No, there is not.
Okay. Can I please have a motion in a second to consider the uncontested calendar?
So moved.
Second.
Awesome. Roll call vote, please.
Chair Satin?
Aye.
Vice Chair Perez?
Aye.
Board Member Beltran Serrano?
Aye.
Board Member Gonzalez?
Aye.
Board Member Music?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay. Next items are the information items on today's agenda, items 8 through 11. We'll begin with the presentation of the progress of developing the Coachella Valley Salt and Nutrient Management Plan. The presenter for this item is Andy Malone, the principal geologist with West Yost Consultants. This is an informational item only, and no actions will be taken. Mr. Yost, the floor is yours.
Good morning. Like you said, my name's Andy Malone. I'm a principal geologist at West Yost Associates. I lead the technical team in the development of the salt nutrient management plan for the Coachella Valley. Thank you for having me back. I'm going to be giving you periodic updates. I've been here before. I'm going to cover some of the same material just to warm you up a little bit and then give you an update, which I think is a positive progress report for you today. Next slide, please. Please ask questions along the way. Interrupt me if you need to, or you can save your questions for the end as well. I'm going to be focusing on some of our progress here for these first four tasks. This is a multi-task, multi-year effort, and we've either completed some of these tasks or we are close to completing some of these tasks. I'll be summarizing for you today. The first task is on loading of salts and nutrients to the groundwater basin. The second task is on current concentrations of TDS and nitrate in the groundwater basin. The third task is an effort to develop groundwater management zones, and I'll get into what those are, but they're basically smaller groundwater units delineated to efficiently manage salts and nutrients. And then we're going through an effort to define what the beneficial uses of groundwater are in each one of these management zones, and then describing the beneficial use thresholds for TDS and nitrate in each one of these management zones, below which the beneficial use remains protected. So talk a little bit about that task. And then task 4, we are employing a groundwater modeling approach to the development of this salt nutrient management plan. This is going to be the first groundwater quality model that's been developed for the valley. And so we took an initial step to describe our approach and get technical advice from our technical advisors. And so that's a separate task on its own before we actually build the models and begin using them to help us develop the management plan. So those are the four tasks I'll be describing to you. And then we'll spend a little bit of time talking about what our next steps are, upcoming efforts, and open it up to Q&A. Next slide, please. So matter of background here, the main regulatory document that we are complying with in the development of a salt nutrient management plan is the recycled water policy, the state's recycled water policy, which encourages recycling across the state. It also recognizes that with water recycling, there's the ability to add salts and nutrients to groundwater, as well as other sources of water that could also add salts and nutrients to the groundwater and accumulate in our groundwater basins. And so it recognized that this is an issue that needs to be addressed and planned for through the development of salt nutrient management plans for all important major groundwater basins in the state. The map that you see on the screen is the Coachella Valley groundwater basin that is subject to the development of this salt nutrient management plan. We have two co-equal objectives for this plan. The first, of course, is the protection of the beneficial uses in the groundwater basin. The second is to also preserve the long-term sustainable and affordable use of groundwater that is also being addressed under the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act by two separate GSAs in the valley. So I'm going to be talking a little bit about those efforts and how they dovetail with our effort here today, too. Next slide, please. This org chart here gives you an overview and a summary of all the players. I'm going to start at the top center there with the steering committee. These are representatives of all the wastewater and water agencies that are funding this effort. They are the ones being regulated. Our main regulator is the Regional Water Board. The steering committee will be the entity that will be making recommendations to this board with regard to adopting the final salt and nutrient management plan and potentially incorporating elements of that plan into a basin plan update. So that's where the CDS&P comes into play there. The center there is the consultant team, which includes my company, which we lead the technical efforts. But we also have a law and policy advisor, Tess Dunham, who has a lot of experience in the Santa Ana region and in the Central Valley. And we also have a public outreach and engagement advisor, too, Megan Wiley, who runs that portion of the project on public input and engagement. Our consultant team were the ones that perform and deliver the work that is being funded by the steering committee. We have technical advisors. We have the two main consultants that are involved in the development of the sustainable groundwater management plant, alternative plans for long-term sustainable groundwater management within the valley. We also have an outside advisor, another technical consultant that has a lot of experience in the Central Valley in the development of salt nutrient management planning efforts there. So this technical advisory group has a lot of local knowledge as well as outside knowledge on similar efforts that are being performed in other parts of the state. They provide technical advice to the consultant team. And then across the bottom are a number of our public stakeholders. We have salt and nutrient contributors, such as representatives from the golf and the ag industries. the Native American tribes of the Coachella Valley, and then other public stakeholders that have the opportunity to review our interim work products and provide stakeholder input.
How big is the steering committee? How many members?
I believe there is 8.
All from different entities?
Yes. They're either water agencies or wastewater agencies within the valley.
Thank you.
Got a question. Is the Mission Creek Basin included in this?
Yes, it is. Okay, next slide, please. The regional board has made it abundantly clear to all of us that stakeholder outreach should be a very important part of this process, and it is. We take it very seriously. We've had 2 community workshops to date, one in March of 2023 and then December 2024. Like this meeting, they're hybrid meetings with an online option. In English, but translated to Spanish, and all the materials are on our website, our publicly facing website, which you have a link to there on this slide here. We've also had several offline meetings with agriculture, the civil group, the Gulf and Water Task Force, as well as numerous meetings with our technical advisory committee as we go through each of these tasks. And then we have regular communications with the tribal government representatives through the Sigma Tribal Work Group. So periodically we show up at their meetings and provide them with an update. That was at their request. Next slide, please. And then a very important part of this is our collaboration with the regional board. The regional board was along with us as we were developing this work plan. It was actually a request from this board to develop such a work plan before implementing it. And so we worked closely with the regional board staff on the development of the work plan, which was approved by the regional board, and now we're in the implementation phase. The regional board has the ability to review and provide input on all of our task memoranda, as well as our outreach and engagement plan that's posted to our website. We have quarterly conference calls with regional water board staff to provide updates and receive feedback from staff. Staff is also invited to attend all technical advisory committees and provide verbal input at that point in time, as well as during the public review phase of our technical memorandum to provide written feedback and suggestions on the draft technical memoranda. And then I'm here providing periodic updates to the board. Next slide, please. This is a summary of the schedule and the scope of work. I'm going to take a little bit of time just to lead you through and summarize our overall scope of work to ultimately there at Task 8 prepare the final salt and nutrient management plan report and forward it to this board for your consideration for adoption. We started off back in 2022. I mentioned to you this is a multi-year effort. We hope to finish in 2027. But we started off in 2022 by establishing our stakeholder groups and our technical advisory committees, and we began the process to work on task one, which was characterizing the TDS and the nitrogen loading to the groundwater basin. Then we there's a little bit of overlap there, but we also began to collect all the data, groundwater data that was available to us, and worked on task two, which was to characterize the recent and current groundwater quality, particularly with regard to TDS and nitrate concentrations across the groundwater basin and by depth. Task three has been this process to delineate what we're calling draft groundwater management zones, and then look at the beneficial uses and the beneficial use thresholds that I described earlier. That's task three. And task four is our developing our technical approach for our groundwater quality modeling models that we're going to be implementing and using in this effort. those four tasks, like I said, have either been completed or are close to being completed. What we're currently working on right now is task five, which is actually constructing the groundwater quality models and then beginning to use them in forward projection mode to evaluate how we believe TDS and nitrate concentrations across the basin will be changing over time into the future under the current water supply and wastewater disposal plans of the parties across the valley.
So with the wastewater disposal, what percent or how much is actually going into the basin of the discharge?
You know, that in our Task 1 memorandum, we do quantify that for the current time period. I don't have that percentage off the top of my head, though, but that is a lookup that I can supply you with after this meeting.
Okay.
And that memorandum is on our website, so okay. Easily accessible.
Thanks.
Task 6 will be based on the results of Task 5. In Task 5, we're going to estimate and simulate where we believe salts and nutrient concentrations in groundwater are going in the future. Based on those results, if we believe that there needs to be salt and nutrient management projects or management actions taken, we will develop those projects and management actions in concept and then simulate them in our models to see how effective they are at controlling salt nutrient loading and salt and nutrient concentrations in the groundwater basin. We say up to 8 scenarios we will develop. So they will be specific in space and time, the management actions and the projects, to try to be as efficient and as effective as we can at controlling salts and nutrients in this groundwater basin and preserving the long-term beneficial uses as well. So task 6 is a pretty detailed task. A lot of work will go into it. Ultimately, what we'll be doing is selecting one preferred scenario as our salt and nutrient management plan going forward.
So are you going to look at the State Water Project, too? Because right now we just received Colorado River water, mm-hmm. and what the benefit might be if we got state water.
State water. Yeah, so that is clearly an option that could be considered. We aren't there yet, but that is clearly an option that could be considered. You mean connecting to the State Water Project somehow with bringing it into the valley and then utilizing it in lieu of Colorado River water. That's what you're inferring.
Right, because I believe the TDS is much lower in the state.
It is. It is much lower. That would be a long stretch to bring state project water into the valley. It would be an expensive project. In task 7, that's where we would evaluate the costs. So we could also have cost comparisons added to our evaluation, which state law requires us to do. So that's what task 7 will be. Once we have identified a preferred salt and nutrient management strategy going forward, then that will be written up in that final report and then forwarded to this board for consideration of adoption.
And does that include an analysis of direct potable reuse also?
Yes. All salt and nutrient loading, and I'll get to that here in a minute, all salt and nutrient loading will be considered in the development of this plan.
Have you been able to use AI to help out on any of this?
Not as of yet. Okay. You know, I would need to go back and check with some of our modelers. They're getting very good at using it and helping them develop code. There is specialized code that is being developed for these models that we're developing. So
maybe in the future, huh?
Okay, maybe. Cool. I'm not aware of it.
All right.
Any other questions on the general scope of work here? I tried to summarize it as best I could, but I'm also going to talk more about each one of these tasks here coming up.
Are you currently on schedule as you show this?
Yes. Yes, we are. Next slide, please. Our review process is pretty extensive. We really want to engage the public as much as possible, as well as take advantage of regional board staff participation and our technical advisors. What we do in the beginning is we develop a technical memorandum. You'll see TM, and that's part of our lingo, but TM stands for technical memorandum, or task memorandum too, because we develop these memorandum for each individual task. We develop a memorandum, we share it with our steering committee and get their feedback first. We'll update that memorandum with the feedback from the steering committee, and we prepare what's called an administrative draft for our technical advisory committee to review. We will typically have a TAC meeting to they'll have an opportunity to review the memorandum, and then we'll have a meeting to discuss it, and we'll get written feedback from the TAC. All that written feedback and our responses to that written feedback, we document in our technical memorandum as we go through this process. We'll update the memorandum based on the TAC comments and then prepare a draft TM for public review. Now, once the public has had a chance to review and we've gotten written feedback, we will respond to that. A written feedback, and all that will be incorporated into a final technical memorandum based on all of the comments that we've received from our technical advisors and the public. The regional board staff, like I mentioned, has two opportunities in this process to provide feedback. We typically take it verbally at the TAC and then in writing during the public review process from the regional board.
Do you have significant public engagement?
Yes, we do get significant, especially from the golf industry, the agricultural industry. They likely might be impacted by this plan, so they're paying close attention and providing us with good information as we're developing these technical memorandum. Things such as like the fertilizer application rates that help us determine nutrient loading to the basin. So yeah, we're getting a lot of good public participation along the way here. We're pleased, as well as regional board staff. Okay, next slide, please. Real quickly, we've completed tasks 1, 2, and 4. We are very close to completing the technical memorandum number 3 on our draft groundwater management zones. 75% is an estimate, but we're getting ready to go out for public review on that memorandum. And then, like I mentioned earlier, we are in the process now of constructing these models. We call them forecasting tools up here, but these are groundwater quality models of the groundwater basin. Next slide. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to start with task 1, real quick overview on our efforts to characterize the current state of TDS and nitrogen loading. We oftentimes abbreviate everything TDS/N. That just means total dissolved solids, which is the salinity of the water. And then N stands for nitrogen, or nitrate is really what we're measuring and tracking in groundwater. Our objective was to describe the locations of where loading's occurring, seasonal and long-term variations and trends in TDS nitrogen loading. This information can help us inform the delineation of our groundwater management zones. Where loading's occurring is important in determining what kind of management zone you want to delineate. As well as this loading, of course, is very important to our groundwater quality modeling. We need to have estimates of the mass loading of TDS and nitrate in order to inform our modeling tasks. Next slide, please. This here is a map that is a good summary showing spatially across the basin where the loading is occurring. So where you see the red polygons, they're relatively small on this map, but these are the wastewater percolation ponds. The areas that are outlined in purple, these are areas where non-potable water is being reused and applied to the ground surface. That could be recycled water or Colorado River water. The brown little polygons are parcels that are not sewered, where septic systems may exist, and septic systems can provide loading, especially nitrogen loading to the groundwater basin. And then the beige areas, polygons on there, are where the groundwater replenishment facilities are, where Colorado River water is being imported into the basin and recharged into the basin to sustainably manage water levels across the basin. So the basin can be pumped and used as a water supply across the basin for all its different overlying water uses. The blue solid lines on here are the Colorado River aqueduct to the north and then the Coachella Canal to the south that are the conveyance to bring in the Colorado River water to the groundwater basin in different locations. The other color shading that you see on here, the blue, which is urban areas, urban landscapes, then the yellow is the golf courses, and the green are the irrigated agricultural lands. This is where water is being applied to the ground surface and, on the landscapes. And the crops or the landscapes use up a lot of the water. They don't really use up that much of the salt. They'll use up most of the nitrate, but what returns past the root zone is a smaller volume of water, but a higher concentration in TDS and sometimes nitrogen. And this water can migrate vertically through the unsaturated zone back to the groundwater basin. The groundwater basin can be pumped again, and that water can be applied again, and through this process you can concentrate and accumulate salts in your groundwater basin. It's just physics of using a groundwater basin. Our models are going to be intended to simulate this process as well, this feedback process.
State potential septic areas.
Yeah.
Are these undeveloped areas? Is that why they're listed as potential septic?
Yeah, some of them might be undeveloped. They're just parcels that that are not sewered, so they potentially have septic systems installed.
Okay.
And some of them might be undeveloped, some of them might be developed.
But just not proximity to a centralized system for connection.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions on loading? That's all I'm going to discuss here, but we have a whole technical memorandum on this where you can go in and answer some of your questions about the specifics and of you know, how much loading occurs from each one of these sources. Next slide, please. Our second task was characterize groundwater quality with respect to TDS and nitrogen concentrations or nitrate concentrations in groundwater. And our objective was to do this both spatially, but we also know that the groundwater basin is vertically stratified in its geology. And hence, deeper wells pump from deeper parts of the aquifer, shallower wells pump from shallower parts of the aquifer. There are some distinct laterally continuous clay layers across this basin that isolate these shallow and deep portions of the aquifer system. So we know this is important, so we tried to characterize deep versus shallow water quality in this effort. This information can also help us delineate our management zones, provide the initial conditions for our models. So when our models are used in forward projection mode, we have a starting point with concentrations for TDS and nitrogen. And then just understanding where the loading's occurring and what water quality looks like today, we can start to infer how the groundwater basin works, where the loading occurs, how the fate and transport of the salts and nutrients. Next slide, please. This information is also going to be important to us in recommending TDS objectives. That's going to be an important part of this. Of this plan is to recommend these TDS objectives for adoption in a basin plan update. And the reason why current water quality is important to that is because that's one of the things that the California Water Code requires us to consider is all of the qualities of the water that are available to the basin. The groundwater is a really important water supply to the basin, so understanding its current water quality is important with regard to setting TDS objectives, as well as to our assessment of is there any available assimilative capacity in this basin for additional loading of TDS and nitrate without impairing beneficial uses. So this information will be important in these efforts too. Next slide, please. In our technical memorandum, you'll see numerous maps such as these, and this is just one example here. I'm concentrating on the left-hand side of this pane here. Each one of these dots represents a well with water quality information right around the 2019 time period. So it's supposed to represent current water quality in the groundwater basin. The small blue dots represent TDS concentrations that are less than 250 milligrams per liter. That's very low concentrations and high quality water. The red dots, the large red dots, represent wells with high TDS concentrations relatively on the order of 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams per liter. There's fewer of those, but you see their locations across the basin. What we attempt to do is take this data and then create spatial grids from that data across the basin that approximate the TDS concentrations and the nitrate concentrations across the basin. So that's what you're seeing on the right-hand side of this pane is our effort to interpolate and sometimes extrapolate the data so that we have an estimate at all locations across the groundwater basin of the quality. What you're looking at here for these particular maps are TDS concentration in the deep portion of the aquifer system. You can see that a good portion of the central part of the basin is still very high quality water, less than 250 milligram per liter on average. So again, you'll see a number of these maps. And the reason why we do this spatial interpolation is because that's the model domain. And so we're going to need to assign these concentrations here as initial concentrations for our forward projection groundwater modeling. So that's, go ahead.
What's the model you're using?
What's the model that we're using? Okay, I'll talk about that in a little bit here because that is our task four, but we are using the ModFlow groundwater flow models that were developed for the SGMA efforts in the basin.
Oh, right.
And we're adding MT3D, which is a groundwater quality modeling component on top of those groundwater flow models that have been already been developed in the basin. So we're really trying to leverage the work that has been done for the SGMA efforts in this basin in this effort here.
Okay.
So there's some dovetailing of efforts that are going on. And that provides us with consistency between SGMA and the salt nutrient management plans.
Well, NTD3 you mentioned, is that the one you shared earlier that it hadn't been done before?
Yes, there has not been such a model developed on a basin-wide scale like this in the valley, not that I'm aware of. And we've done some research. Okay, next slide, please. Take a minute to talk about management zones. Again, we're not done with this technical memorandum yet. We expect to release it early here in 2025. Our objectives are really twofold here. First is to delineate groundwater management zones, which they could be defined by area. They could be defined by depth. We will describe the beneficial uses of each one of these management zones and then the beneficial use thresholds for TDS and nitrate concentrations, again, below which the beneficial use remains protected. So we'll be making an effort to describe all this key information that will be used later on in our effort to evaluate our model results. The second objective is to characterize the reasonable beneficial use, the protection of the beneficial uses. What we'll be doing there is we'll be estimating the ambient or average TDS and nitrate concentrations in each one of these management zones and comparing them to the beneficial use thresholds to make that determination of whether or not beneficial uses are currently protected in these management zones or not. Next slide, please. When we delineate these groundwater management zones, we will have various considerations. We'll be looking not only at the geology and the hydrogeology of the groundwater basin, but we'll also be looking at our understanding of where recharge occurs, how groundwater flows through the basin, where groundwater discharge occurs. Groundwater discharge occurs mainly by pumping, so we've got a good handle on that. We will also be considering where TDS and nitrogen loading are occurring. We'll be looking at the current distribution of TDS and nitrate concentrations. We'll be looking at the overlying beneficial uses. And then lastly, the location of hydrogeologic vulnerable areas as identified by GAMMA. I can tell you that most of this basin has been defined by GAMMA as hydrologically vulnerable. Next slide, please. This map here is our draft groundwater management zones. We're sticking to some of the subbasin, the current subbasin boundaries, but we're subdividing a little bit further. And I'll start with the Desert Hot Springs, which is on the north side of the San Andreas Fault. That's colored in purple. It is really separated tightly from the rest of the groundwater basin by the San Andreas Fault, which acts as a barrier to groundwater flow. The kind of light green wedge there is the Mission Creek subbasin, but we're calling it the Mission Creek Management Zone in this effort here, and it's wedged in between the Mission Creek strand of the San Andreas Fault on the north and the Banning Fault on the south, both of which act as strong barriers to groundwater flow. And then the Indio subbasin is on the south and is on these yellow shades of color. And we have subdivided that into a northern reach, which we call the Indio West Management Zone. The overlying land uses here are mostly municipal and golf course. The aquifer system is unstratified for the most part here, so we don't have any clay layers that are stratifying the aquifer system completely. So for those main reasons, we have delineated the Indio West Management Zone there in the northernmost upgradient portion of the Indio subbasin. And then Indio East, we have subdivided into three vertical units. The shallowest unit is about no more than 100 feet deep, and it is shown by that crosshatch pattern there, which we call the perched zone. And then beneath that, we have the Indio East shallow aquifer system, which goes from about 100 down to a 300 or 400 feet depth. And then there's a clay layer, a laterally continuous clay layer, and then a much deeper, thicker groundwater management zone, which we're calling the Indio East Deep Management Zone, and that's where the majority of the wells pump from and put that water to beneficial use. We're calling these draft. As we go through our modeling efforts, we may learn things that that cause us to want to modify these management zones to effectuate more effective salt nutrient management. So these are draft for the time being. We fully expect to come up with revisions as we move forward through this process. Next slide, please. We have also made an effort to do a lot of research on establishing TDS and nitrate beneficial use thresholds for the various beneficial uses, the major beneficial uses of groundwater in the Coachella Valley. For the municipal beneficial uses for domestic drinking water, we have a range of TDS thresholds that are aligned with the secondary maximum contaminant levels for TDS, which are 500 on the recommended end to 1,000 milligrams per liter. And then for nitrate, it is based on the primary drinking water MCL of 10 milligrams per liter for nitrate as expressed as nitrogen. For outdoor irrigation of landscapes and golf courses, our TDS threshold is 1280 or above milligrams per liter. For industrial, it's greater than 850 milligrams per liter. And then look at that range for agriculture, 448 to almost over 6,000 milligrams per liter. This is based on the research that we've done to look at all the various crops that are grown here in the valley and looking at their salinity thresholds for what quality of water can they produce their crops at. So that's why we have such a large range. It's really crop specific.
One question. What are the years that research you're referring to was conducted? Like from what, like from 2014 to 2019 or?
So that'll be in this technical memorandum to all the various sources that, but we did try to do as thorough of a research effort as we could because we know the importance of this, especially to the agricultural industry. And we're actually working closely with the agricultural industry on getting the most current data and information on these salinity thresholds for crops. Next slide, please. We're going to go to the last task here that I'm going to talk about here today is the development of our technical approach for forecasting TDS and nitrogen concentrations in groundwater. We wanted to employ the most appropriate and efficient technical approach. That's why we're collaborating with the SGMA agencies and utilizing their groundwater flow models that they've put so much effort into updating, refining, and making them useful for the sustainability efforts that are ongoing in the valley. But we also need to develop an approach that's going to satisfy our needs to project concentrations of TDS and nitrate. Next slide, please. This is a map that shows in black outline the Mission Creek subbasin model domain. And then in the red outline, that's the Indio subbasin model domain. There are two separate SGMA efforts going on and two separate models. You can see they bound each other and overlap. Well, what we're doing is we're going to combine those two models and put an overlay of our groundwater quality modeling tool on top of it. So we will be able to take advantage of this cascading approach from the Mission Creek subbasin model into the Indio subbasin model and utilize both those for groundwater flow and then again overlaying our groundwater quality modeling tools on top. The little cross-hatched area up top is showing you all the different model cells. Each one of those model cells, the model simulates the groundwater conditions, both the water levels and the water quality in each one of these model cells. And these model cells communicate with each other and groundwater flows from one cell to the next. So that gives you an idea of our spatial resolution of our models. And next slide, please. So I'm going to give you a little preview of how we're going to utilize all this information in the development of our salt nutrient management plan. So give you a little preview in a hypothetical way of where we're going with this information. Next slide, please. Okay. don't expect you to read every word here. I'm going to explain this chart here to conceptually describe what we're attempting to do in this development of the salt nutrient management plan. This is a time series chart. So if you look across the bottom, we're simulating time from 2010 to 2020. That's going to be our historical period, and then going forward, our future period to 2021. On the y-axis are increasing TDS concentrations. We don't put actual numbers on this slide because it's very hypothetical and conceptual, but increasing TDS concentrations on the y-axis. The two green dots, those are our efforts to develop current ambient TDS concentrations for a 2010 time period and a 2020 time period. You can see 2020 is a little bit higher in TDS concentration than in 2010. So there's some indication of a trend of degradation in this example here. The green line is a model projection of, hypothetically, of where the model is indicating TDS concentrations are going in this particular groundwater management zone. I should have mentioned that this is supposed to represent ambient water quality in a groundwater management zone. So you can see that it's indicating that under the plans that are being simulated by this model, that TDS concentrations will continue to increase and the rate of change will gradually slow down over time. You see the red line across the top is a hypothetical beneficial use threshold for TDS concentrations in this groundwater management zone. You can see that because our current quality is a lower TDS concentration than the beneficial use threshold, that our interpretation here would be currently the beneficial use is protected in the groundwater basin. And the purple line represents the magnitude of a similar capacity for additional loading that would still result in TDS concentrations that are below the beneficial use threshold. However, our model is indicating that right around the 2060 time period, that the ambient TDS concentrations will exceed the beneficial use threshold, and therefore the beneficial use will be impaired. That's what this example is showing here.
Is this related to population growth?
Well, it could be related. This is very hypothetical, but it could be related to a lot of different things. Population growth and additional pumping and application of water outside and increased return flows to the aquifer system. Yeah, that could result in increased TDS concentrations over time. But there might be other factors.
What would you say would be the top two or three reasons for this increase, based on your experience?
Well, every groundwater basin is different, for certain. In this groundwater basin here, we do import a lot of Colorado River water at fairly high TDS concentrations. So that is going to be a major salt contributing factor. We also have a lot of overlying irrigated agriculture and golf courses, and these return flow processes are typically very important in groundwater basins too. With the model, the value of the models is that you can begin to quantify the relative importance of all these different loading sources. And so then you can begin to develop management strategies that are going to be most effective at controlling salts and nutrients in the basin.
So if some of the irrigated lands convert to housing projects, is that a benefit to this overall or a detriment?
Well, it would really depend on what type of agriculture and what type of loading was associated with it. And then, yeah, what's the overlying contribution of now the residential area or commercial area? You know, what sort of impact is it having? Again, the models are really effective tools at beginning to understand what the impact of those types of changes are on groundwater quality in the long run.
And do your models then look at the reliability of the Colorado River water over time, too?
Well, we will be making assumptions about that and including those assumptions in our model scenarios. Not only how much Colorado River water we'll be using, but what the concentration of TDS particularly will be. There's efforts to control the salinity on the Colorado River, so we can investigate what the effect of those efforts might be too.
Any talking about the Colorado River having some kind of salt removal before it gets here? Is that
there is a separate effort going on within that regard. I'm not intimately involved in that, but I'm aware of it, and we are utilizing information coming out of that effort. It's a multi-state effort to try to control the salinity of the Colorado River.
Okay, that helped too.
Yeah. So the point of making this slide here was to show an example where we think in the future there may be some exceedance of a beneficial use threshold, and hence the need to simulate and or develop and simulate salt management strategies. So my next slide will show you an example. If you can go to the next slide, it will show you a different model result where we included in this model scenario various salt management strategies to try to control salt nutrient loading and hence stop the TDS degradation in this management zone at some concentration below the beneficial use threshold. So this would be an example of salt nutrient management projects that the model at least is simulating are effective at protecting the beneficial use in the long term. We will also be making cost estimates of how much this will cost in the long run. And developing multiple scenarios and comparing and contrasting the results, not only their effectiveness at controlling TDS concentrations in this case, but also what are the associated costs. So, again, very hypothetical. We've been talking about this for a long time. It's going to become reality, and the next time I come to you, I will likely be showing you our model results from this effort. Next slide, please. What's coming up next is I mentioned Task 3 memo should be out early here in 2025, as well as our model construction and our first model runs that we'll be simulating the current water supply and water disposal plans, wastewater disposal plans in the valley. So that will be our Task 5 TM. So that's coming up. And again, everything is posted to our website. You see our homepage here. A lot of good information on there for your reference. Maybe I'm coming to the end of my presentation. One more slide, please. I am done. Happy to answer any more questions you may have.
Yeah. Are the solutions you're looking at in the event of a threshold exceedance, are those all technological and infrastructure, or are you also assessing changes in land use policy and or policies that can be adopted by this board or something like that to mitigate?
To be determined. I think all options are on the table. So what we intend to do is step our way through this process where we'll first look at the existing plans that are being developed, particularly for sustainable groundwater management in the future, and what are their long-term effects on water quality. And then based on what we learn from that initial model run, then that's the time to start talking about projects and management actions that could be employed to address when and where we need salt nutrient management in this basin to protect the beneficial uses. So it's never too early to start talking about potential solutions, but it's that first model run and the evaluation of those results that will trigger more informed discussion about what types of salt nutrient management strategies should we be developing and simulating with our models.
Back to my original questions regarding public engagement. You mentioned the golf industry and the agricultural industry. How about those individuals that are not in that industry, public, It would be great to know if the public in general is informed and if they're invited and if what efforts you're making to get these individuals at all ages. I'm talking about generations, including the youth.
Yeah. So one of our initial tasks was to develop a outreach and engagement plan. In collaboration with the regional board here, we understood that this was a very important part of the process. So that plan is published on our website, and it describes our process and how we go about our public outreach. We have a public outreach coordinator who runs that part of our project. She's updating the database, the website consistently. We make outreach efforts and try to be inclusive and invite as many people as possible to our public workshops. And we maintain an email listserv where we're informing people, and then our website too is outward facing, and we try to advertise it as much as possible and get as much public engagement as we can. I would say that it is the salt nutrient contributors that may be impacted by this plan that are the more involved to date, but we have had pretty well attended public workshops, and we do get feedback from others in the public.
That was my question. How successful are you? Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Appreciate being here.
Thank you, Andy. Okay. Next item is the executive officer report. Will be presented by Michael Placencia.
Good morning, Chair Perez.
Pending.
Good morning, Chair Satin, members of the board, and members of the public. I am Michael Placencia, Executive Officer. You have my report in your binders, but I would like to draw your attention to a few activities. Our staff reviewed and issued supplemental sampling work plans for per- and polyfluoroalkyl alkyl substances, also known as PFAS, at four sites: the Imperial County Airport, the 29 Palms Marine Corps Combat Center, the Palm Springs International Airport, and the Pacific Gas and Electric Company Topok Compressor Station. In November, staff conducted joint water quality sampling at both the northern and southern ends of the Salton Sea with California Department of Fish and Wildlife for nutrients, salts, metals, and pesticides. The staff associated with this activity were Emma McCorkle and Samantha Shapiro. Also in November, staff attended a virtual meeting with the Irrigated Lands Coalition and stakeholders to receive updates on their membership efforts and fish tissue sampling work. The staff involved were Ryan Culhane and Emma McCorkle. I also have a few additional updates for the board. In December, I approved a $21,552 settlement agreement with Verdon and Celia, LLC, Fairfield Inn and Suites for permit violations. The permittee is now in compliance with permit requirements. Regarding our staffing vacancies, we are at various stages of recruitment and of the recruitment and selection process for multiple positions, including posting advertisements, reviewing applications, and scheduling interviews, so I hope to have more to share soon. Finally, I'm happy to report that all work is complete on the office renovations, give or take some minor details. But there are lingering odors from the glues and solvents, so we are targeting the early part of March for all staff to return to the office. This concludes my report.
Michael, quick question. When you agree to a settlement, is that contingent upon they pay it within a certain time frame?
Generally, that's stipulated in the orders. I could defer to.
I'm Cassandra Owens, the Assistant Executive Officer. And yes, in the order, it usually stipulates that they pay the fee within 30 days of signing the stipulated order.
Thank you.
Awesome. No other questions. Thank you, Mr. Placencia. Moving on to item 10, do any board members have anything to discuss or would anyone like to suggest a topic for a future board meeting?
I would just like to thank Chair Satin for the past year for doing a job well done. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I'd just like to I have the CWEA, which is the California Water Environmental Association, had their annual awards dinner. This is the Colorado River Basin section of CWEA has an award. They have award ceremony for all the different wastewater treatment plants that we have in our Colorado River Basin region. And I just like to name off all the people and the agencies that won an award that night. Okay, first of all, we have the Community Engagement and Outreach Project of the Year was Mission Springs Water District, considered a small region or a small wastewater treatment plant. The Collection System of the Year, a medium one, was Norton Viola, who operates the Palm Springs Wastewater Treatment Plant. Collection System of the Year, the small Collection System of the Year, is the City of Banning. Operator of the Year, Joey McElron from Mission Springs Water District. Then there is Appreciation Award for Mark Graham, does not say where he came from. Appreciation Award for a Bill Tegu. And then there's Collection System Person of the Year, Grant Fournier, Mission Springs Water District. Laboratory Person of the Year Award, Maria Luna Valley Sanitary District. Collection System of the Year for large was Coachella Valley Water District. Safety Plant of the Year for a small was Palm Springs. And Outstanding Young Professional Award was Jeremy Minizarez from Mission Springs Water District. I believe he was a student. He is a student at DHS High School, and he's part of our Real Academy program with the Mission Springs Water District. Anyway, so I just like to announce that, and I also, there is a spelling error. I didn't mention it during the meeting when we approved the minutes of the meeting, but the minutes of that meeting on page 8, Patrick O'Dowd is his name, not, it's just a typo error, so maybe you want to just correct the way that we spell Patrick's name on that one. And also, speaking of other things to do, I know this one's probably, it's a long ways, and the Topoc tour, we haven't done one for many years. Maybe sometime, not even in 2025 if we can't, 2026, whatever. But eventually get the board out there to see it in person. We had a nice update, I think, in our last meeting or the meeting before, which was good. But to go out and see this place, I think it's really important for us. Actually, what they have finally come up with is to take and to change Chrome 6 into Chrome 3 underground, which I think they've just started. They did the pilot project. It worked really well, and I think they're starting to do it in a bigger process. So it might be something that this valley in the Coachella Valley might eventually be able to use. I don't know much about it, but I'd like to know more about it. Thank you.
Chair Satin, I would just like to congratulate our new chair, Perez, and co-chair, Martinez, for a well-run campaign.
I'll ditto.
All right, any other report outs from board members? Great. All right, moving on to item 11, chair's report. I attended the chair's meeting last week. Hot topics of discussion were, of course, the wildfire response. We got an update from that from State Board Member Firestone, and, of course, ongoing budget negotiations between the State Water Board and the Department of Finance. And with that, any items for closed session?
Not this time.
Wonderful. The next meeting is tentatively scheduled for March 4th, 2025 at 10 a.m. and will be held at the City of Imperial. It will be down south. With that, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you for attending.